podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing.
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum podcast. There has been plenty of rugby this week, no shortage of headlines. But it all just feels a little bit weird, doesn't it, Justin? Let's try and get to the bottom of this. Have you ever known a Lions tour quite like this one?
No, it's mad. It's absolutely mad. What's really weird is that thing right from the very, very basic. What do you mean you've changed the kickoff time? things are so strange. You know, the fact that, you know, Wales are sending out emails last week saying we've confirmed the kickoff times for the autumn internationals, and you're going, well, about time too. And that, it's not until, like, you know, for months to come, but you literally we're swapping messages on WhatsApp on Wednesday going, right, so why
is there a game happening?
Is there a game?
I mean, yeah, this obviously the major stories that we've got to contend with this week. We've got two Lions games against the same opposition to pick the bones out of. We've got Finn Russell's injury and Marcus Smith's call up to look at. We've also got a Wales draw against Argentina. Against this only dawned on me right towards the end of the game, another 14-man opposition to pick the bones out of. So we'll be getting to grips with all of that. But I do want to start with the Lions tour, because it even feels like Sky are phoning it in. Do you know what I mean? Like the hype that you have. And I know there's not the crowds there, and you'd have Scott Quinnell, like running up and down the touchline doing his thing, and everything about it just feels a little bit odd. I know Miles Harrison's ill and recovering, but it doesn't feel right without Miles Harrison commentating on it. You know, it just, everything feels, where's Barnes in all this as well? Because Barnes isn't commentating, is he? It's all, everything just feels a tad odd to me, like right from stuff like that through to obviously the fact that there's no crowds and we're having kickoff times changed. So yeah,
Sky are pretty bulletproof, like you say. You kind of know what to expect, and you know, you almost, one of the things I guess is one of their great appeals is the fact that they know exactly what you're going to get, you know. And in this kind of weird broadcasting era where you've suddenly got Premier Sports turning up, and you've got people even in let's just say it, the football, and leave it at that, even in the football you get pundits kind of there's none of that kind of, obviously it's been over the period of years now that punditry is, people have just swapped channels and changed da da da. And Sky's always been pretty good, isn't it, at just what we have, we hold. You know, it's the same formula since 1997, pretty much.
Probably even earlier. It's I don't know if it's just they've lost their enthusiasm for rugby because this is all they've got. But then ordinarily, you'd think they'd be funneling everything into this because it's the only rugby they've got, and it is such a special event. But I don't know if it's a direct result because the tour feels weird because of the disruption that coronavirus has caused, or the fact that there's so much other sport, especially the Euros, going on at the same time. But it just feels like it's not getting that same level of hype that Sky would normally put behind a Lions tour.
Yeah. But it must be, can you imagine actually being part of the production team? Obviously the faces in front of the screen are doing what they can, but it must be chaos behind the scenes, because they'll send, oh my God, the Quinnell fan van thing, man, it's just so cringe. It's beyond, isn't it? It really, really is. And that's almost indicative of how lame everything is. But I do feel that they must be running around behind the scenes. And then at the same time, they're probably saying in the earpieces of the presenters, look, it's just normal. Just carry on. It's just normal. Because I think they can't afford to say, well, this is absolutely mental. They can't do that, can they? Because Sky doesn't do that. They do product, push the product, push the product. And they can't sit there and kind of go, obviously they have, you know, they ask questions about the credibility, but they can't be seen to be undermining it because it's their product.
I mean, this is it. This is the organization that has made you get excited about West Brom Fulham on a 1 o'clock on a Sunday. You know, it's the Friday night, Monday night football, that, you know, that whole Monday night football, that there was no real reason. They were always, not always, but often they were dud games. You know, it was, Fulham versus Aston Villa or something with very little riding on it. But they turned it into that thing just by almost just banging you over the head with it and going, Monday night football, this is brilliant. Monday's a terrible night of the week. And here's some football to make everything better. And here's Andy Gray or Gary Neville to put far too much analysis into the weekend's football. And it worked. And this time round, it's just like even Sky can't whip you up into a frenzy. And I don't know if it's just that cliche of it being the fans, but everything about the tour is weird at the moment. And
well, Wednesday sums it all up, doesn't it?
It does.
People wearing the wrong shirt. When have you ever seen a professional rugby game where like the number, you know, your outside half hasn't got a shirt number and your right wing is wearing a number 10, and that, I mean, absolutely.
I genuinely did that thing because I watched that with, because it was early on they scored that first try, and I watched it as I was like making a cup, I hadn't put my glasses on yet, and I was like, geez, Farrell had a turn of pace there without realizing it was Lewis Rees-Sammet. It's just, everything about that was so, so strange.
And it must be, again, if you think it's bad for the production team, what must it be like for the squads themselves? I mean, I know that they're primed and ready for action at a minute's notice, but they're not, though. They're not.
The man I feel most sorry for, and I've said this a couple of times, in all of this is Jason Leonard, who just must have had it earmarked when he got the gig. He sold it into the wife. He's like, look, I'm going to be away for, there's going to be a load of dinners in the build up to it that I'm going to have to make myself available for. I'm going to be away for 5 weeks with the squad. And you in his head was just thinking, this is going to be brilliant. And, you know, this is what he's ended up with. Give it to him next time. Give it to him next time. In fact, the same squad of players. We have to take the same squad of players. Everyone who has gone this time gets to do it all again in 4 years' time in Australia, because this one just doesn't feel like it counts at the moment.
It must be quite challenging for the players to, you know, suddenly be jettisoned into a team or suddenly, this is almost like the complete antithesis of modern rugby, isn't it? Where you're probably preparing diligently for every eventuality on the pitch, but none of the eventualities of what we're experiencing off the pitch. So do you think that it's bringing something out of certain players, and then, or are they just machines? You know, it's almost, if you think about the Tour de France, for instance, everything is so strategic and tactical all the time. And then you get crazy things happening, which is happening on the tour as well, which is just adds to the whole lunacy of last week. It was like, what is going on? And do you think that certain players are more adaptable and would, or do you just think they can just play and they can play given any given circumstance?
Firstly, Murph will be gutted that we've started talking about cycling and he's not here. Secondly, I just think it's impossible to say at the moment, given the opposition that we faced. You know, the first game, obviously Japan was a slightly different thing because it was over here, but just too powerful for Japan. You know, he picked a massive side and it blew Japan away, and obviously all the injuries and everything that went with that. Then you had the first game against the Sigma Lions, and they were they're the weakest side that we'll face the whole time, and it showed. Then you kind of blew the Sharks away midweek because they'd been playing Currie Cup rugby 5 days before. They put a better show together on on Saturday. But that, I can't figure out if that's the kind of test that we usually have, you know, the early stage jitters, or just that it's too hard to find club sides shorn of internationals that are good enough to give the Lions a warm-up game in this day and age. New Zealand is probably different because of the strength in class, but you think back to the last Australia tour and we were thumping sides, you know, when you're playing the combined counties 15 or whatever, and you're thumping them by 200 points with Shane Williams on the wing. You know, it's all, I kind of wonder about that bit. The weirdness of this has made it all a bit existential. And I just kind of start thinking, like, what is the future for the Lions? Is it about playing touring teams, or would we be better off playing, you know, on a tour to Australia? Do you play Tonga and Samoa and Fiji as warm-up games? Because they are sides that play together. They will have their internationals. I don't think you can say whether those players have been able to adapt or not because of the quality of the opposition.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, about the idea of revising, because you don't want it to be just test matches, do you? You just can't do that.
You
can't prepare just for test matches. And they are... It's so... I mean, maybe that's another thing about the media coverage, or certainly the Sky coverage, is that the punditry is almost impossible as well, because you don't really know what's working and what isn't. I mean, obviously, there are certain players who've put their hand up for selection, which is always the thing that that's what we obsess about at this point, isn't it? That's the narrative, is which players are doing that.
Which we love as well, right? That's the beauty of the tour game. That is the beauty of the tour game. Whether it's John Bentley or Tim Rodber, or I'm trying to think of a more recent example, but that's the bit that we love, is a player just getting hold of it and getting that opportunity. And I think that is what makes it special. I'm trying to think back. There was a book, there's like one of the history of the Lions. It might be Clem Thomas, I think, and they interview McGeekin in there and talk him, and they talk to him about 2005, which he was on there as like a midweek coach, wasn't he? I think. Yeah. And he said that the thing was splitting the camp. You can't take a touring camp, you know, a midweek team and a test team, and expect there to be harmony and the midweek team to not feel aggrieved, because that's been the beauty of a Lions tour the whole time, is everyone has the opportunity to get two starts and to stick their hand up. And you might be able to do enough, you might not. And I do think that bit is important, but it is also like, you know, I looked at Duane van der Merwe tearing it up in both these games. He looks terrific. But then part of he's going, to go back to my forced horse racing analogy, is this a Tuesday at Fos Las? Or is this, you know, is this a trial at Cheltenham? You know, how good is that form? I don't know. And that's kind of the beauty of it. But you think the safe bet is to go for Watson. But part of you just goes, God, you'd love to see van der Merwe get a go, because he is terrifying defences at the moment.
Yeah. Random thing. Did you know that Clem Thomas ran a butcher's in Mumbles in Swansea?
I did not. Was it good?
Fine. You know, not it's not quite kind of like it was
back when you used to get your meat from the butchers anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Rather than this is an artisan, you know, this chorizo was you know, was made in Monmouthshire, you know, with or whatever. That's what butchers are these days.
He didn't have a barista in there, or selling artisan pastries alongside
it wasn't chops. That was not the Mumbles vibe of the 1980s, I can tell you.
I'm pretty sure it's Clem Thomas, but it's an excellent book, and it charts the whole history of the Lions up to about 2009 maybe, but it's really good. But there we go. Yeah, so I mean, we should come on to talk about the stuff on the pitch, and it has been odd. And I think that, to go back to that point about players putting their hand up, the one area for me that I just think is nigh on impossible at the moment is back three. Like, if you were to play the tests tomorrow, and they're not far away anyway, but even if there were no warm-up games, how on earth do you pick a back three out of those six players?
Yeah, because every time you see, even in Saturday's game, I thought it was interesting because you could see Hamish Watson. There's always the suggestion, obviously, he rampages through Six Nations defences, and then everybody's going, yeah, but it's the same as the Sam Simmons argument. You see him coming up against the massive Springboks and it'll be a different story. But again, he there were moments when he maybe lacked the kind of dynamism that we've seen. And then there were moments where he was amazingly dynamic. So I think it's, for me, after Saturday, it was all about feet. It's all about feet. It's like, yeah. Courtney Laws has a little bit of foot movement. You know, obviously Toby, we know that's his thing, is like, you know, it's not just running straight into, and even with the second rowers, Johnny Hill is just going to run straight into somebody and, you know, but Byrne and Laws and those people are just able to stay on their feet for just that split second more to be able to, so that support can get, and they can get quicker ball out of the rucks. That seems to be the thing for me. I'm obsessed with that at the moment.
I was talking about the back three rather than the back row, actually, but let's stick with that.
Let's stick with it
because I think, you know, you're absolutely right. It's another position that, and you've touched on the second row there as well. It's, you know, there's so much competition for places, and largely everyone's playing well. You know, I don't think you could look at too many players. I mean, Elliot Daly was man of the match yesterday and made the, I thought he was excellent, to be fair, but he made the most bizarre mistake I think I've ever seen, or in the last 10 years in an international, where he just completely forgot how to pass. I think he's got a great opportunity to start, but there's not been those moments where you think so-and-so's had a bad game, they're not going to get through it. Possibly Gareth Davis, I thought.
That's who I was going to say. Murph's Tommy Price would have been the beneficial, he was the beneficiary of Saturday's game, I think, really. You just think that there's definitely an opportunity for him to, Gareth Davis just did struggle, didn't he?
Yeah, there are times when he can look really, really rusty, Gareth Thomas. And I think Gareth Davis, and post the 2019 World Cup, I don't think he's quite hit that same match winning form, but he is one of those. I think Greenwood pointed it out when he threw that intercept pass. That was a Gareth Davis special, wasn't it? He's exactly, you know, he's made that thing his own of floating around in the back line and picking things off and making what can be match-winning tries, not just through that, through sniping around the break. So I wouldn't write him off, but I would say he's very much the third choice scrum half at the moment. Whereas I think the other positions, I think like we said, Bigger looks nailed on to me, yeah. Particularly with Russell getting injured. I can't see Farrell being able to to crowbar his way in at 10 without an injury.
They were desperately trying to persuade everybody that that was a possibility, weren't they, on Wednesday?
I'd completely forgotten he started the first test in 2017 at 10. And I don't know. You know, like we said, he looked really, really poor there when he played for England
There was just one kick, I think, that he made on Wednesday that you just thought that was a part. I know it's really harsh because they've got split seconds, and there was one kicked to the wing instead of putting it through the hands that I just thought that was almost an Eddie Jones play that Gatlin would have gone, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, it just felt like it just does. I think. Oh, is it fair to say that because he's played so much time at 12 that there's maybe just that little bit of, he doesn't have the authority?
I think he is a 12, isn't he? Like, you know, I don't know, to me he just looks like a 12 now, because yeah, since that period of time he's only played international level, really. You know, 9 times out of 10 he plays at 12. There's been the odd occasion where he's been picked at 10, and again, for a test match, I don't think you can really thrust him into there. I still think, what I will say about Farrell is, you know, he's not perhaps the most, I know he's not particularly popular in Wales, and I kind of get that. I don't think that, you know, obviously that won't factor into anyone's consideration for the actual selection. He's not perhaps the most exciting player to watch, but one thing you can say is he is a big game player. He's got a great big match temperament, which clearly runs in the genes. You know, you think back to the performances and keeping his cool in the test series in 2017. In 2013, likewise, you know, he was there and did an admirable job in the squad. And then that World Cup semi-final, you know, against New Zealand, he showed up and put in big performance. So he is a big game player. But I just think at the moment there are players at both 10 and 12 who I think are considerably ahead of him.
Let's go back to the back three then. So if you were, you know, pick your three now.
So my three before the tour were Watson on one wing, Liam Williams on another wing, and Stuart Hogg at fullback. Now, I think they are probably the three most proven back three players at test match level. I know Stuart Hogg hasn't started a test for the Lions, I don't think. But I think he is comfortably good enough to do that. And I think he's banging form from the Six Nations. Liam Williams and Anthony Watson, likewise, I've got no questions about either of those. The headache has come from the fact that Josh Adams has scored two hat-tricks. Duane van der Merwe has scored six or seven tries already. And it's just, it goes back to that earlier point of how much weight can you put on these early performances? Because if it was based solely on the form of these, then you'd have Adams and Duane van der Merwe on the wing. And that's before you even look at Lewis Rees-Sammet. So if he picked that starting back three that I'd mentioned there of Watson, Williams and Hogg, I would have no qualms with it whatsoever. But likewise, the one I think who is knocking down the door at the moment is van der Merwe, because I think he does offer something very different. Josh Adams is brilliant and he's a wonderful finisher and actually did a great job at fullback. But I think he's in there on the strength of the fact that he's a brilliant finisher. But they all are, I think. You know, if you have any of those players on the wing, you'd back them to score in a kind of one-on-one or a proper try-scoring opportunity. Whereas van der Merwe, I think he comes off the wing looking for so much work. He can bump players. He's looking to offload. His speed is great. He's looking for space. He's the one I could see at the moment dislodging someone. Who it would be, I'd be tempted to say Liam, but at the same time, when you're playing against the box and they're raining the ball down from 80 metres in the air, is there anyone else you'd want underneath it? So I don't know. Long way round it, I'm going for my original back three.
Yeah, well, I would have said exactly the same in before the tour. And it's interesting that, again, punditry on Sky, they're pushing Zamit really hard. It's obviously Greenwood's got a lot of love for him. And van der Merwe, just wonder whether, again, defensively, I guess, is the thing that they're going to wonder, you know, because obviously the South African wingers are going to be quite scary.
I think that's it. Who do you back to have, you know, to
the
mark
complete game,
Colby and Mapimpi? And I think that, again, Liam and Watson would probably have the edge over van der Merwe in that scenario.
Yeah. And Liam on Saturday looked like he was just desperate to get into the game, and for some one reason or another, he just it didn't happen. You know, the ball kept on going to Daly all the time. Daly couldn't have had more ball in a game, and Harris got tons of ball as well. But Liam just didn't seem to get into the game as much as he really desperately looked like he wanted to.
Apart from the telling contribution of taking an elbow to the head in an old school cheap shot from Hendrickson, which what was it? I saw it as it happened, and it's like they're going to have a look at this. Just think what, and the fact that they kept panning back to him on the bench with his head in his hands afterwards, it's just one of those stupid rush of the blood moments that you might get away with in a Curry Cup game, but you won't get away with in a Lions Tour game. And they were banging the game. They wouldn't have won it, I don't think, but they were banging the game up until that point. You just think the stupidity of flying in with an elbow to the head, given the current climate. Again, you know, 1997, you get away with that. And you might even get a rise out of the Lions and it benefits you. You don't get away with that in 2021.
No, not at all. It was mad. It just looked like it was just I suppose it sounds awful, but if you're going to take a cheap shot, make it happen, you know, make it a really cheap shot. It just looked like it was just a pointless cheap shot.
Yeah.
He's also, I was a bit perplexed by the fact that he looked like Donald Glover, you know, Childish Gambino. So it was like having Childish Gambino had been red carded. It just felt wrong. I got this kind of cross-cultural, he just looks like Donald Glover. But there we are. That was just me.
I know. I get that completely. Right. We're going to have a look at the remainder of that game. We're going to look at the Wales game, and we're going to continue to have a look at who is, in inverted commas, putting their hand up for the Lions. But first, we're going to take a very quick break. Welcome to the second half of the Attacking Scrum podcast. You mentioned Elliot Daly just before the break there, and then I said, you know, there was that very strange mistake that he made. Otherwise, I think he is making a really big impression on this tour as to offering something very different in the centre. Centres is a fascinating one, isn't it? Because I think we all expect there to be a real power game in the centre, but the opportunity to have someone who's a playmaker and a footballer offers you a big left peg, both out of hand and from the tee. God knows whether these games are going to be played at altitude or not. I've given up guessing. But I do think he offers something completely different to all the other centres in there, doesn't he? And he's staking a real claim.
It feels to me like there's a touch of, it may be this, going back to what you said about not knowing how good the opposition, well, kind of knowing how good the opposition are, not very good. Perhaps, I hope it's not us luring ourselves into our romantic sort of romanticism of let's check the ball around. But one of the things I loved was seeing bigger miss pass and then to Daly and then miss pass. And we were getting the ball to the edges really, really well at times. Obviously, there was that one Daly complete ridiculous moment. But apart from that, I just really loved the fact that we were stretching the opposition. But I just, again, is that just because they were able to find the time to make those to make those passes? But it felt to me that Bigger and Daly had something going on. And Chris Harris did his job really well, and that could be Bundiaki doing that job too. You just don't know. But I
Henshaw for that matter as well.
Yeah, if Henshaw gets fit, obviously. Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is if Henshaw is fit, I think he's still probably the front runner to get a centre berth, because he could play either. But I could see, I think if everyone is fully fit and in form, I could see Henshaw and Daly being a really potent centre partnership, offering Bigger that, you know. And then we kind of talk about Henshaw being a crash ball merchant. I do think he has more than that, but he is obviously physical and robust, and you're going to need that against South Africa. But Daly just offers something to unlock defences and a good kicking option. I mean, almost as if he should have been playing 13 this whole time rather than at fullback.
What are you saying, Jeff?
It went through my head numerous times, Murph's expression of Gatlin slapping Eddie Jones in the face with a wet fish. And it does feel like that, you know, every time you watch in there, you know, that one bizarre mistake aside. There's an excitement in there. And I think, I don't know, I think it's a little bit of a misconception that Gatland just wants to play. And I think that's why he hates all that Warren Ball stuff so much, is that I think that's the game plan he chose to play with Wales for so long, because that's the players we had at our disposal. You know, we didn't have a proper footballing 12 or 13 really, other than Hookie. And again, he played hook in there for a while. And he did you think back to, there was a game at Twickenham where he had like a Phil Bennett handoff that he scored. And there was a time when I thought, you know, Hook might have got that run in the centre. But other than that, when he settled on Robertson Davis, you knew what you were going to get was, and then Hadley Parks and those kind of players. But I think that's why he played that game, is he knew we had a physical pack. We had, physical, you know, physical centres, even physical back three players. They were the best players, so that was the best game plan to get out of Wales. I'm not saying he wants to throw the ball around like, you know, like the Japanese side do, but I do think that Gatland likes to have players in there who, you know, if there was an Elliot Daly knocking around in 2008, 2012, I think Gatland would have picked him if he thought he was good enough. So I think it's a little bit of a misconception that he just wants to play stuff it up the jumper rugby. I think he wants to play physical, intense rugby, and that includes room for a playmaker.
I agree, because I also think that that's his, the rationale for the back row again is it. I think the thing, difference between our perception of Gatland and the reality, I think, is that I think the one thing you've got to be able to do is defend really well. And then if you are able to be a really good attacker, so again, with the back row, it's about, he wants them to be quick. He wants them to be speedy. He wants them to open the game up. But as long as they do the other stuff well. So there is the basic criterion is do your work. It was right back down to the days when he wouldn't pick Hibbard for a while because he wouldn't do the work in defense and he wasn't a rucking two. Do you remember that sort of argument? And then it was such a compelling performances that Hibbard put in that eventually they had to relent.
But yeah, and he picked him for the Lions as well as for
But I think that as long as you're able to do the stuff that you're supposed to, the bread and butter stuff of defending strongly, then he's happy for you to be expressive and open, which is why again where someone like Liam comes in. Again, I still can't get over it. When they put the shots of them on the screen, when they do the team, and the team is, and there's a full shot of Liam with his bandy legs and his slightly oversized arms and his tiny frame, you just think, how does he do that? How does he do what he does? But that's a classic case of Gatland going, well, he can do all the stuff the nitty gritty that I want him to do, but he's also a tremendous play, heads up player as well.
Yeah, he is. And the other interesting thing I think about the game is, you know, we're not going to, even if the Lions had their best ever performance in the history of the world, you're not going to put 70 points on South Africa. So obviously the tries and stuff capture the headlines, but there are certain moments in that game that I think hold together as interesting pieces. There was a brilliant cover tackle from Chris Harris, which has become a theme from him. Again, you know, he did some excellent stuff in the Six Nations, particularly against France, where it was a last ditch, scanning across the line, I've got him, bang, crucial tackles. And there was at least one of those yesterday. And again, it's those kind of things that in a test match, a line break, if you can shut it down, then it has a massive, massive impact in a game. You know, if we make those errors that we did yesterday, the Daly one, the Gareth Davis one, I'm sure there's a couple of others. I forgot most of the tries came from errors. But if we do that, then we will be, the Springboks will be out of sight. You know, you won't be catching them. So I think it's more telling those little bits of whether it's a key turnover or a really interesting tackle, you know, a really important tackle. They're the bits that I think are quite interesting and will have kind of caught the eye of all the coaches.
I think Daly just smacks to me of the perfect person to bring in off the bench, though.
Do you?
Yeah. I think so.
I mean, obviously, yeah, the fact that he covers everywhere from 11 to 15 helps with a bench spot. But then you think, if, I don't know, yeah, do you put him, I guess he goes as 23 cover, which then means you've got another one of Rhys Sammet or Van der Merwe or Liam Williams or Josh Adams missing out, which is just, I mean, the strength and depth is incredible. And I think that's almost why perhaps we're not seeing as heated a debate this time round about selection. Maybe it's just the fact that there's other stuff going on, or maybe it's the fact that I'm trying to boycott social media a bit, but it's
the same, I think, with Cowan Dickey, and it's the same with Courtney Laws. It's almost, these players are just, they're fabulous.
Yeah, they are.
Cowan Dickey looks looks just in the form of his life. But they, the danger that they present to the opposition when they come in, come off the bench, just seems almost too compelling to start them. And I can see George starting, and I can see, you know, Itoje and Ayanother starting, and that Laws is on the bench.
Second row is an interesting one, and you're right. I mean, I think Laws has been impressive, and I am I'm a big fan of his. Obviously, Tadhg Burn is very much being considered as a six.
Yeah.
And the one thing that's interesting, they mentioned it yesterday, is perhaps the driving line out hadn't really fired. No. And obviously, they picked up a couple of tries yesterday. But from a line out perspective, this is where I kind of think Adam Beard could well stake a claim, and that would be an eyebrow raising selection. But I also just think, like, particularly from a defensive point of view, I'm not sure there are too many others who do it as well as he does. I think he's, you know, he is like that Charterist totem pole in the middle, stake in the ground, arms all over the top, but he stops things moving forward. And I think against Lasca, that's massive.
I think he was my standout player in the Wednesday game, but that was probably because my expectations of him were not as high. And I thought it'd be great if he has a good game. He didn't have a good game. He had an outstanding game, and he showed soft hands. He did so much donkey work defensively around the edge of the ruck and things. He was just really, really good.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was. I was mighty impressed with him, as I was with Henderson as well. I just think that Henderson, I don't think gets enough credit for what, you know, again, obviously a lot of Irish fans were upset that Ryan didn't make the tour, but I just think in terms of Irish locks, who I just think don't get the credit they deserve, it's Henderson for me. I think he just does so much donkey work. And there's plenty of dog in there. Yestin as well,
which, you know, dog.
I like a bit of dog in a second row, and it's I don't know. I just it's almost impossible. Whoever you pick, I think Itoje has to be in there. You know, was it a stomach upset or something that kept him out?
I'm not sure. I just nowadays I just don't even ask anymore.
When you got Toby coming off the bench as, you know, as outside half cover, it's you do kind of forget what ailments certain players have got. But
yeah, and we were all hoping that that once Finn Russell was on, that, you know, there would be a problem at scrum half, and then suddenly it was going to be, obviously Elliot Daly ended up doing it on Saturday, but I was on the Wednesday, we were all like, kind of, come on, give it a Ken. Yeah. You know,
he would do it. I seem to remember, this is like going back 20 years, Australia playing the Barbarians, and it was like it was a Wednesday night game, last game of the tour. And I'm pretty certain they picked Totai Kefu, the number 8, in the centre, and him doing a pretty admirable job in there. Part of me was thinking, Toby could play inside centre. We know he's got the physicality and he's got the footwork. He's quicker than people credit him for. I would have liked to have seen that at one point, just Toby getting a go, reminiscent of Mike Phillips playing in the centre at the end of that third test in 2009. There is something joyous about watching players on a Lions tour play out of position.
Yeah, and randomly again, we were talking about the fact that Craig Mitchell, you know, played prop, is now turning out for. I've got a friend, a rugby mad friend called Claire, who is from Tonna, you know, outside Neath, and that Craig Mitchell is now playing 10 for Tonna after quite a colourful career in life. Certainly slimmed down, and
maybe that was it. Maybe that was all the frustration in there was, you know, he's been played out of position all this time, and he was just an outside half screaming to get out of the tight edge
as a really, really sluggish back row forward / second row, just because there wasn't anybody else who was remotely around 6 foot. I can sympathize with that, because I spent all my time trying to perfect Bryn Mawr Williams' reverse pass in my garden, which obviously wasn't great. And that's what I always wanted. I remember gathering the ball from kickoffs and trying to spiral the ball straight into touch, and people saying, stop that now, you know. This is not how we do this.
Possibly my finest moment on a rugby field, of which there have been very, very few, was an under 12 game, I think. And I was playing flanker and the ball was bobbling around at the back of a line out. And I picked it up with my back to the opposition line and put in a Robert Jones kick, as I called it then. It wasn't called a box kick in those days, I don't think. And just hoofed it and then turned around, and to my surprise, it went perfectly, because I didn't spend my time messing around in the park, in the garden, doing donkey work, clearing out a ruck. I spent it messing around doing kicks like that, because it was more fun. So yeah, one of the very few times where anything like that paid off. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's it. We're all frustrated halfbacks playing out of position, aren't we, at heart? Talking of halfbacks, we should talk about Wales now. In the spirit of odd games, watching the Millennium Stadium decked out in Argentinian decor because it was technically their home game, certainly ranks as things that prior to 2020 we'd have thought were odd. But another odd game, another sending off, and a draw. Like what the hell was that game about?
It was extraordinary, wasn't it? Sometimes you realise just how hard rugby is.
Hmm.
And I think the first 40 minutes in particular made you realise just how difficult, how brilliantly professional players make the game look,
mm-hmm.
and how the thin line between organisation and chaos, where that kind of cliche about you could throw a blanket over and that's what you want in your forwards, where you want the null to be. And there were more holes in, particularly up front, gaps and holes and no sense of cohesion in any way, shape or form. And then the 9 and 10 just got absolutely wiped out time and time again because of it. So Sheedy looked like he didn't have the faintest idea what he was doing. He was looking outside and it's like, there's no backs there. Where have the backs gone? It was almost like they'd gone for a cup of tea or something.
It was a bit of a, I don't want to say an awakening for Sheedy, but obviously he plays in a very, very good club side. And his opportunities for Wales have largely been off the bench. You know, Canada are not a comparable international side, certainly not the side that's over here at the moment. And I felt like it was a bit of a rude awakening for Callum Sheedy, that it's not all, you know, it's not all getting loads of time on the ball and choosing whether you'd go for the wiper kick or the wraparound pass. You know, it's, I don't know, it was a difficult one for Callum Sheedy, I thought. And I thought Hardy had a rough game as well, particularly his first 5 minutes, you know, that was really quite rough. And I think his strengths are that he does the basics so well. You know, I think Hardy, you know, he box kicks very well. His service is normally very good. And all of those things were off. I don't know if it was just a bit of rustiness, but I found it strange that he didn't start with Thomas Williams. Obviously, he came off the bench. And Hallam Amos got the man of the match. It was Thomas Williams. He changed that game completely. And yeah, he was my man of the match. But I found it strange that he didn't start him, because that's been the one thing, as things have been moving in the right direction for Wales, we've still not found out who our best nine is. And I don't know, maybe that's it. Maybe Pivak very much thinks that Hardy is the best choice there. But
yeah, no,
for me, that was an opportunity to have that continuity and give Williams the chance of starting games at nine, because every time he's done it, he's played relatively well and then gone off injured, or, you know, I don't know. I thought it was a bit of a missed opportunity there.
Yeah. I mean, I think when he has a really good game, he's just clearly head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of his game management. That the fact that he managed to get round the Argentinian scrum and disturb the Argentinian scrum half, and then so we got a scrum and then we scored from that. He made that whole thing happen from first to last. It was just commanding, really.
It was part Mike Phillips for the first bit and part Gareth Edwards for the second, and that's what you want in a scrum half. And I like the fact that there was lots of niggle in there, and, you know, spikiness
but he obviously came on the pitch and said, I've got to sort this out, and there aren't many players who do that. And I'm not sure, I think you have to, you almost he almost felt like the skipper of the team.
I find it quite weird as well, because surely, you know, we all think of Pivot. Again, maybe this goes back to kind of misconceptions of coaching style, but we all think of Pivac of wanting to play a running game, wants lots of ball players in there, wants people who are fearless when there is an opportunity to go. All of that screams start Thomas Williams, doesn't it? Above all the other players, even Gareth Davis, who's a very attacking player. We've said, we've said this before, that his ascent to top class international player was built around his defence rather than his attack. Whereas it's there's obviously something he doesn't like about Thomas, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because the nine thing, it's almost as if every coach feels like they just have to have a steady Eddie, sort of solid, da 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 da, you know, almost predictably reliable nine, and who then can do the jack, you know, the jack in the box moment, but again, they have to be able to do 98% of the time to be almost predictably reliable. And I think Thomas just changes games, as he demonstrated yesterday. They would have definitely lost that game were it not for his performance. That's why he was man of the match.
Yeah,
because they would have lost the game.
Oh, undoubtedly.
And I've seen, obviously, with you and your sort of social media blackout, I did bits of under the line looking at the BBC website and bits on Twitter and things. And people were up in arms, even after the, up in arms going, this is sorted out, PVAC. And I don't think this is that sort of game. I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel... Maybe I'm just unemotional because I'm living in England and the football is so overwhelming that I've just shut down my emotions. But I just thought it's fine. It's what you want to do is have tests against these decent countries.
Well, and this is a good Argentina side. You know, it's not a second string Argentina side by any stretch, is it? And obviously Wales are missing Alan Wynne-Jones and obviously through injury, and then all the other touring Lions. You've not got Bigger or Gareth Davis or Halfpenny's missing with injury. There's a lot of names out. And so I think all in all, it again is encouraging in terms of the strength and depth. I just think that there is some of those key selection things that's like we said before, that is the bit that you get judged on as a top class international coach, less so on a summer tour game like this. But when it comes to whatever's happening in the autumn, because we've got the big three in the autumn, haven't we?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, you've got to get your selection absolutely spot on. And I would very much argue that first up, you need to nail down who that number nine is. Now, maybe that's made Pivac's mind up yesterday, that he's gone, actually, okay, gave Hardy the opportunity, but we know that the kind of imprint that Thomas can make in a game, he's going to be the starting nine. But for me, it would have been about, I'd made my mind up on that ages ago and would have been picking him at nine consistently, so he gets that exposure there. But these are the things that these tests are here to iron out on. Whether I know they're fully fledged internationals, but these are the opportunities to figure out what the weaknesses are in your squad and where you need to shore up. So you're right, it's not the same as a Six Nations or an autumn international game, is it? Or even just a test against South Africa or someone.
No.
And that's no disrespect to Argentina. It just
No.
It doesn't have that same intensity.
That's what it's there for. It's there for Ben Carter to go, oh, hello, this is quite difficult. It's there for players who are just, you know, who are just finding their feet, they're not going to find their feet unless they get the opportunity to get knocked back a bit and then come back for more. And it felt a bit like also losing Wainwright.
Oh,
you can big loss.
You can only imagine how excited I got at that break in the first, whatever it was, 10 minutes. I was like, there was a split second. I was like, he's going to go the length. He's actually going to score. And, He's coming back to his best form there. And to be fair, credit where it's due, it was very much Pivac's idea to pick him at eight, and I'm completely converted on that now, because he's quick. He's quick and dynamic, and he seems to, I think actually that probably is the long-term future for him. And it made a big difference. And also, as brilliant as Josh Turnbull is, I kind of thought that, you know, Turnbull was on there as kind of second row cover, mm-hmm. and he came on and made a turnover straight away, which was brilliant. And he had, you know, he had a fantastic game. He's a great player. But the balance of that back row shifted a bit because you lost that dynamism then. You've got the hard hitting of Moriarty. Turnbull just, again, dog, which is great. And then you've got both of them, I suppose, for that athleticness. But I kind of thought in losing Wainwright, you lost a player who, again, is adding you a lot of explosive go forward. And you're not going to get that from Turnbull. I think, really, you probably should have gone and backed Basham there and just said, you're the back row cover. We're going to have... And do you know what? I think... I like Jim Botham, but personally, I think Basham's a better player. I think he has more potential because of his... Again, Cardiff fans will probably disagree, and maybe it's just being a one-eyed Dragon fan on this, but I think there's... And again, Basham himself made mistakes, but I think he's explosive, an explosive athlete, as Botham is, but he's better over the ball. And I just think that would have been the decision to say, right, you know, I'm backing you here. Whereas again, does that leave a little bit of doubt in Basham's mind that I'm the back row cover here, the number eight has gone off, and you've opted to switch the second row cover to eight? So I don't know. That for me was a mistake. But
yeah, it didn't look the back row didn't look. That said, obviously they were getting schooled by the Argentinian pack for a lot of that game anyway. So it was very, you know, until they got them into their pick and drive kind of sort of mentality. I also want to just say the best name in international rugby ever.
Oh, go on.
Geronimo de la Fuente.
I hadn't realized his name is Geronimo.
That's the best porn star or you know, that is just the best rugby name ever. Geronimo de la Fuente.
What's Fuente? What does it mean as well in Spanish?
I don't know, but Geronimo with a J.
That is incredible, isn't it? That's Geronimo de la Fuente. Yeah, that's borderline unbeatable, I think. As fantastic names go. But yeah, it's another strange test match in a very, very strange period of rugby. But
Will Rowland's good.
I thought he had a good game, actually. Again, I think he's putting his hand up as, you know, with Ball and Hill and presumably for a little while Alan Wynne-Jones out of contention.
Yeah.
I think he's putting his hand up as a real contender there. Again, go for it.
Ross still looks sharp.
Yeah, I don't like this passing the ball. He's suddenly developed. What's it? Ross Moriarty in the back line with space, run at someone and hit him really hard. I did feel like we went wide a little bit too quickly, actually, particularly when it's Ross doing it. I was like, no, head down, full speed, clatter into people over the gain line. I thought we got that wrong, and obviously we were getting turned over so easily that. In the wide channels in particular, that I think we kind of got that game plan wrong. But he's looking super sharp, and he's enjoying his rugby again. Clearly, you can see, who was it when it must have been when Thomas scored, but they kept showing the replay of him just going, "Fucking come on!" and you know, again, it's like that's what you want in Ross Moriarty. I just want the guy fired up. We said 3 years ago when they won the back-to-back test in Argentina, and do you remember he got sent off?
Yeah.
I almost don't know if you can tame that bit from him, because he's just, when he's playing his best, he's super fiery and super combative, and he's a great option. But again, there's so many options in the back row that you think that when everyone's back, he might not even get in the match day 23.
Yeah. Jonah didn't quite get enough of the ball, but
yeah, he didn't. Again, I don't think that of the two wingers, I mean, Lane got a lot more ball and perhaps didn't quite I'm going to really piss off Cardiff fans here, but everyone says, I get so much feedback on this that says that we're
massive feedback in inverted commas.
Yeah, that loads of people have said that they think we're massively Cardiff centric on this, and I think so. I don't know. Maybe I'm just readdressing that. I thought Owen Lane looked a little bit, a little bit laboured, and I'm a big fan of his. I like him a lot, but I wonder whether it's just that extra percent up to test match level where he looks more of a centre, although I've never seen him play centre, or the only once or twice.
It's the great mystery of modern rugby, is that we've all made Owen Lane a centre. Who's
I know who never plays there.
No,
but yeah, Holmes to me, on the glimpses that he did get. And, you know, again, there's no secret how much of a fan of his I am now. But I think he looks every bit the international winger. He, you know, again, he's not going to get in the 23 when everyone comes back. When, you know, when Liam and LRZ and Josh Adams are back, he doesn't get, you know, he might sneak onto the bench. But
yeah,
he looks every inch the international winger to me. And I think if he'd have had a bit more ball, then I think he could have caused a bit more trouble. Again, I don't know whether it was a missed opportunity to play him at 15, possibly. Don't know. Might be getting that wrong. Again, Hallam Amos, you know, he had his best game in either a red or a blue shirt for a while. And he's definitely a 15 over a winger, certainly at international level. I just, again, it's a tricky one, whether, you know, I think you know what you're going to get with Hallam Amos, don't you? And I think that is kind of, these are the test matches that he's tended to put in his best performances, are against Argentina not that Argentina are a lesser opposition. I think his best performances come against Argentina and some against lesser opposition as well. So it's a tricky one. I think he's at an interesting phase in his career now where, you know, how does he kind of kick on? And I think the first thing for that is, you know, he's really nailing down a starting berth at Cardiff, which I'm still not sure he does. If Cardiff are playing their best side, is Hallam Amos in it? I don't know. God, I'm gonna get pelters from Cardiff fans for this, but
no. But it's really difficult. It is difficult because he's almost the signature peripheral player. You know, he's been there or thereabouts for such a long time now. And that's no reason to go, oh, we're bored of you. Yeah. Let's get somebody else in. But it does ask questions about all the young. We were so excited when the squad was announced because there were lots of young players, and maybe it's enough for them to get training time. Maybe they don't have to get game time. But my gut feeling is it would be constructive at some point to put them at least in the 23. So
it would, but then, yeah, you know, you think about that and go, right, we got out of Dodge and got a 20-all draw against a 14-man Argentina. If we'd have gone with a load more, you know, let's say with Holmes at 15 and Tom Rogers on the wing, that's, you know, again, you're losing whatever it is, 30-odd caps worth of experience from Hallam Amos there. You're already shorn of the experience of Halfpenny, which we didn't mention on last week's show because we only spoke about the Lions, but God, that guy has some cruel luck. You know, like minute one into the game, you just thought it's the first time any fans have been allowed. He's played in front of any fans for any period of time. And that happens, which again has happened to him on that pitch in a nothing game before. I was there that game against Italy, and it's just, yeah, you really feel for the guy. And I just hope he's able to make a recovery because he's had so many awful injuries from torn ACLs to repeated concussions. Again, he's a guy who does not get enough credit for the huge performances he's put in a Wales shirt.
Well, and also the fact that for a while we were wondering whether he could ever get back. And I don't think anybody ever said, oh, you know, Halfpenny gets an easy ride or Halfpenny's dialing it in. You know, even when it came to Scarlett and everybody's going, ooh, it's not really happening. And then he rediscovered his form. And that's just amazing. A player who we've almost followed every single game he's played since he was 19 years old. And it has been emotional. He's had some amazing times and he's been the best fullback in Britain, bar none.
Yeah.
He's been the most reliable person that you would put your house on since Neil Jenkins to kick the vital goals. And then he's had not so much dips in form, but just because of his injuries, has never, you know, and to come back in the last 18 months or 12 months and play so well, and maybe not, okay, he's not tearing through the midfield like he used to, but he's still, you know, you admire him now for those. He's still touchline corner flagging tackles, and still he's incredible, really.
I know, it's kind of like, it's so difficult because I think he's been a victim of the fact that he was so good and looked so composed at the age of 19. And it wasn't, you know, the bit we all got excited about was his pace. And, you know, those breaks he used to make were just incredible. Whether he was playing on the wing or at fullback was just awesome. But then that injury in 15, that must have affected him in terms of his ability to have that turn of pace and to reinvent yourself and just build on those brilliant defensive credentials that he's always had, but just make himself an out-and-out 15 and do a brilliant job there. It would be such a shame for this to be, you know, for this to be his last game. Not that I'm suggesting it. You just wonder now, with all the competition that there is in the back three and another big injury to have to come back from, another set of surgery. I just really hope it's not, because I would love him to sign off on his own terms, not on a horrible injury like that in a largely meaningless game.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about the great Welsh internationals of recent years, that they do it on their own terms. They have done it on their own terms. You know, there hasn't been anybody who's been sidelined for quite a while now.
I don't know. Like, I think about Jamie Roberts. He certainly didn't get to go on his own terms. You know, 90, stranded on 94 caps.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I never thought of Jamie.
You know, whereas Martin Williams, they awarded they gave a cap to a Barbarians game so he could tick over to 100, didn't they? And
good point. Yeah, you're right there, actually. What would you do next for the second test against Argentina?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, look, I think the back row, whenever you have a bad performance at the breakdown, the temptation is to point it at the back row and say that the back row balance was wrong. I think that back row balance was wrong, but I don't think that's why. The only reason why we struggled at the breakdown. Ellis Jenkins was on the S4C English comms, and I listened to that, and obviously he knows a thing or two about breakdown play, and he was saying a lot of it was because we were isolated and the outside backs weren't able to clear out. And I think that's a really interesting point. For me, it's as much game plan as anything else. Like I was saying there, I think we were in too much of a hurry to get wide, and I would like to see Ross truck it up the middle a bit more and try and get over the gain line before looking to hit those outside backs. Personnel change. I do think the back row needs looking at. I don't know what Wainwright's injury was. And I don't know. My guess is if he's gone off after 20 minutes, he's probably not going to be fit for next week. So I think we need to have a serious look at that. And again, who's going to play eight now, realistically? It's a tricky one. But I would be looking at maybe moving Ross to eight and then... maybe another fetcher. Maybe it's starting with Basham in there. God, I've forgotten who's in the bloody squad now, to be honest. It's so hard to keep up with everything. I think the back row needs a little look at. And then in the backs, do you keep things the same? Probably. I don't think there's a huge amount of point other than changing Tomos at nine. That would probably be it. I don't think wholesale changes would necessarily help. Dylan Lewis, I thought, struggled at scrum time, which didn't help.
I think the front row didn't. Well, yeah, Dylan Lewis really struggled, didn't he?
Yeah, so I'd be tempted to maybe look at Leon at tight head. But again, I know people say Leon Brown isn't the strongest scrummager. It's not the biggest part of his game, but I think he is showing more signs of improvement in that regard. Obviously, he doesn't offer the same over the ball threat that Dylan Lewis does. So, I think that's a tight call. I'd have no problem if they stuck with Dylan, but also I'd be tempted to have a little look at Leon starting there. So, yeah, a few changes. I don't think wholesale ever particularly helps. What about yourself?
No, I feel the same way. It just feels I'd agree with Leon, because I think that you can only groom a player for international rugby for so long without just giving him, same as you, your Tomos argument. Can we not just give? I'm not saying, you know, Dylan Lewis is great, but Leon has been, we've talked him up as somebody who we think can make a contribution over a period of time. Let's give him two or three games, or let's at the very least, let's start him and see how he gets on. Because again, we have to think about this as an experimental period. And like you said, there's a ton of players who are going to come back. So, you know, let's not try and make it, the performance is important, but it doesn't feel like the crazy autumn games where we seem to have no direction and no clue or no idea of what we were doing. And obviously the coaches were proved right in that they were trying to bed in new ways of playing. And it wasn't a great performance by any means, but it feels like you've just got to keep on going, really. But you've got to, yeah, I think you've got to put some of those players in positions of pressure in order for them to see whether they've got the right stuff or not. And that's the most important thing for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just very quickly going to take the edge off the anti-Cardiff. It's not an anti-Cardiff, but the perceived anti-Cardiff.
You're really worried about this, aren't you? Clearly worried.
It's such a hard thing to balance with four set of fans, particularly when it comes.
You bigging up Thomas, it's okay.
That's right. I am bigging up Thomas, but I will also say that I think we missed an opportunity by not having Domachowski in the squad, because I think he's been brilliant all season and gives you that nuts and bolts. And I don't know whether I'd have started him over Nicky Smith, but I do think he's a player who I'd have had a look at to see whether this guy is international class or not, because he's been so good for Cardiff. He's kept Rhys Carey out of the side. But there we go. That's one. And I'm going to finish on a couple of reviews here, Justin, right? Now, this is an interesting one. There's two.
Cardiff bias.
No, this is one where I've got to give you a bit of a bashing live on air here, right?
Oh, great.
This is one from a few weeks ago from Di F, who just says, poor research and knowledge of Asta Lafera alumni, right? One, John Hartson did not go to Asta Lafera. Apparently not. They've produced more players than Tavis Noyle, both Brew brothers, Lynn Jones, Derwin Jones, Christian Phillips.
Derwin Jones is 2 years below me. He doesn't count as a rugby player, with all due respect. Oh, God, I'm really, yeah.
It's all right. He's not a big bloke anyway, either, is he?
No, it's not. No.
So there we go. I
didn't know the Brews went to Slavera. Wow.
Well, I didn't.
So Derwin Jones, who else did he say?
Derwin Jones, both Brew brothers, and Christian Phillips.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, wow. Yeah, I stand corrected. I mean, you know, I'm from Swansea, you know. I went to Asta Lafera, but it was a long, long time ago. I totally stand corrected there. Schooled properly.
There we go. Well, I did feel schooled because I thought, well, obviously I'm very conscious of me sounding as home counties as I do. I thought, oh, well, this will be all right. We're safe in the hands. We're safe in the hands of Yeston here. And apparently,
where did Hartson go to school then? I wonder. I'll have to look it up. Okay.
And then this one, some criticism that's thrown at me, but also with a 5-star review. So I'm quite happy with that. It says, can't believe you got rid of traffic at the end of the show. Gutted. That's a temporary change for the moment. Traffic will return when we go back to the normal season. We've just got Wonderwall in for its 97 Lions connotations. So there we go. But yeah, that's it on the reviews front. If you want to write us a nice review, because I much prefer getting those. My fragile ego much prefers getting those. Or indeed, if you want to slag us off for anti-Cardiff bias or whatever it might be, please make sure you do it on iTunes.
I can corroborate. Ysgol Gyfun Gwyr in Gowerton was where Hartson went to school, I'm so old that that school didn't actually exist when I was young. So yeah, okay.
You're off the hook, Yeston.
Thank you very much.
In my eyes, anyway. Whether or not Di F is coming back or not, we apologise, Di. We'll make sure we have better research going forward. It's my fault for letting that slip through the net. But thank you for listening, Yeston. Thank you for giving up your Sunday morning to chat to us. And of course, we'll be back to talk whatever mad rugby has happened in the next 7 days, whether or not the Lions tour gets cancelled or indeed Alan Wynne-Jones makes a miraculous recovery and ends up playing for them. We'll be back to cover all of that with you. And finally, a quick thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
today. Sports Social Podcast Network.